Thanks very, very much, David. Not least that, having me focus Cedar Research on these matters. There's four topics where the research funding is targeted. Water is one. Broadband is one, which we've already very much a player. The four doors of competition, infrastructure competition, PPPs and greenhouse. But this is the fourth topic. As Ghana has said, it's the diabolical one. I think the volume has excellent papers on these difficult issues, and I'm not going to attempt to summarise them, and two of the key authors, of course, will be doing that from their own paper. My views have drawn heavily on David himself as an energy expert and the Cedar community and colleagues. Those who have recently influenced me include Jeff Carmody and Gary Sampson. Much earlier, though, I was influenced as student, teacher, colleague by Bill Nordhaus, Ken Arrow, Ron McKinnon, Hal Varian and others. So to me, this is an old issue made topical by events, and it was intriguing to get that comment in page two of The Australian today, because that's been my take, that economists were out there articulating a trading scheme as a pedagogic device. Almost all of us, from the very beginning, really thought externalities should be targeted in a Pigouvian way, after a very famous economist called Pigou. I know as a former academic that cap and trade then was a teaching device. Quotas, credits, compensation and carve-outs, however, would lead such a device to bring us back, in my view, to the old world of protection, corruption and so forth. Indeed, the bottom line is that we want to get back to a predictable and transparent tax. So endeth the first lesson. What has happened over the last few decades is driven by a mix of facts, variations around warming, and theories modelling. What is true from a community perspective is that the accumulation of greenhouse gases, and notably CO2, is seen increasingly as both excessive and as a cause of global warming. The community's attitudes have been conditioned by what is perceived to be volatile weather, changed rainfall patterns, and much more. And although this paper makes no comment on that science or the causes, costs and benefits of global warming, it acknowledges there is broad-based community pressure to reduce carbon-emitting activities in Australia, greenhouse gas activities, and to reduce those emissions in some way that is efficient. The Australian government has responded to these community pressures with a carbon pollution reduction scheme, which is just a variant of cap and trade used in Europe under the name ETS. This has occurred despite the fact the ETS schemes deliver negative protection when adopted unilaterally, as Jeff will be articulating. It penalises the energy-intensive goods that dominate Australian exports and exempts imports that will compete with locally produced output. This has created understandable Australian pressure for compensation and carve-out measures so that the firms do not feel victimised. While the government and even some members of the opposition favour the CPRS, the problems of implementation are so substantial that there needs to be developed a far more efficient alternative. If the model of tradable permits is not made international, then it cannot meet its objectives. Yet by going international, it brings in the key emitting countries that also have very poor standards of financial governance. It is simply unreasonable to expect a trading scheme to work across those countries. And as Gary Sampson will note, there are recent moves across Europe to shift from an ETS towards tax models. Along with Carmody and the Cedar volume, my paper supports a system where a tax per tonne of emissions is imposed at source, but that, as with other input costs under the GST, this cost is passed down the chain of production. Price quotes and invoicing enables consumers to see the carbon element of price, which is a relatively minor modification of the GST invoicing system. Goods and services that avoid using carbon at all stages of production will pay the pure 10%. Other goods and services will pay a premium in proportion to emissions intensity, weighted over all stages leading to final sale. exports from Australia would be zero-rated and taxed by the importing nation's carbon reduction policies. Imports to Australia would be subject to border tax adjustments, so they are treated the same way as locally produced items. Jeff and Gary Sampson will present on these matters very shortly. One comment I would make is that the many firms that make trivial emissions as part of generating their value added could be exempted from direct carbon tax, except they would still be paying carbon elements in prices of inputs and passing them along the GST chain. This would apply, for example, to most service firms. An underrated problem with the ETS is that the trade is in financial instruments, or GHG greenhouse gas derivatives, not carbon or greenhouse gas. We should have learned a lesson from the current global financial crisis. The bust of 2007-09 was brought on by toxic financial derivatives and their misuse, trade, and securitization of what should have been secure housing finance. This quantity of emissions argument for a CPRS is false because the leaking of emitting production overseas, because there's a serious issue of emissions leakage, there's absolutely no certainty, in fact, about whether the quantity of emissions reductions can indeed be specified by a CPRS. And so the main difference between a CPRS and a carbon tax is lost. While the ETS and the CPRS currently have a political head of steam in the EU and Australasia, and possibly the US, there are many creaky bridges to cross. A particular source of vulnerability arises from its reliance on the creation of another financial derivatives market, and the emissions and debits and credits and package derivative instruments that this market will spawn. That's why the financial experts, the bankers, rather like it. There's a lot of asymmetric information. The difference between the current financial crisis and a future carbon derivatives bubble is the necessary involvement in order to obtain a global ETS solution of the many jurisdictions in the developing countries. As new jurisdictions with high carbon emissions join the market, this raises a new layer of complexity around the question of financial governance and the quality of carbon accounting. The emissions trading scheme ducks the question, who should pay for this adjustment? In contrast, a local carbon tax based on national consumption of emissions is something the world community can develop and phase in gradually. It can help finance tax cuts and reduce emission schemes, and with no penalty to first movers, as Jeff eloquently illustrates. A carbon tax can replace mortar sorting taxes. It can fund R&D schemes to help the Indias and the Chinas and provide aid to do just that. In summary, quite apart from the EU evidence of the past 12 years, there are many in-principle reasons to doubt the efficacy and durability of an ETS system, given the continuing necessary involvement of assessors, auditors, and regulatory parties. I don't mention here the head of the carbon trading division of the Papua New Guinea government has been arrested, trading something that didn't exist. That's the sort of thing that will happen as we bring in the genuinely polluting countries. There is corruption, there's real capacity for a financial bubble. As with the financial crisis, many question whether counterparties to these contracts outside the OECD, for example, will seek to exploit the major weakness of an ETS, and there's a question then whether there will in fact be the emissions reductions as per the credit instruments that governments will be signing. An additional point of asymmetry raised here is that the ETS fails to engage financial support of consumers who've been lobbying to do something about carbon. But it does attract the financial community who profit from the trade. A carbon-adjusted GST is a broad-based approach in sync with community pressures for clear incentives. While politicians favour the ETS, there's widespread agreement amongst economists that there are threats to its long-term integrity and durability. And remember, this is a long-term solution across a huge range of countries. Sound economics suggests the case then for a consumption tax. Ross Garnaut's final report also agrees with the thrust of this paper when he says in his summary on policy, quote, a well-designed emissions trading scheme has important advantages. However, a carbon tax would be better than a heavily compromised emissions trading scheme. And if you want any evidence about a compromised system, listen to the Canberra parliamentary show. A carbon tax integrated with a GST also fits with the capacity of new technology and smart devices to inform us of costs in ways that have low transaction costs. Increasingly, techno-savvy computers can use these devices, and you see one from Google's power meter. This is the way things are going in the future. The phasing in, a carbon tax can be set at values per tonne that escalate to the desired value over a period, making a phasing element more politically manageable and economically sensible. A ramp-up of the tax fits with technical discounting arguments, I quote Ken Arrow and others here, and notably that there is no case for precipitous action despite the current hype. While Australia does not wish to be a free rider in reforms aimed at creating a safer and better planet, we should not be forced into unsound agreements or well-meaning but ineffective measures that will undermine the economy in the short run for no certain long-term benefit. At a minimum, we should design a robust scheme for shifting to a low-carbon economy without large costs in transition. We need to get the incentives right and phase them in to adjust without trashing existing production and assets. We should also foster R&D, aid in new developing countries in their emissions strategies. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll leave it there just to say that CEDA research is very much on side with what has been discussed here, and I'll leave it to Jeff Carmody and Brad Page to deal with more of the substance of these issues and options. Thanks very much.